Amnon could not get over his lust for Tamar. And because he had such lust for Tamar, what he decided to do is he was going to feign that he was sick, and she was going to come into his room and bring some cakes that she made. And when she brought those cakes in the room, he would finally have his way with her, and he did, and he raped her. And some time ago, I was reading through the Proverbs like I normally do, and I came across Proverbs 7. And as I came across Proverbs 7, I thought about Solomon. I thought about him sitting at his desk, and it was night. He had a breeze blowing through the palace windows. He had a candle lit, and every time he got ready to write, he would have to stop, and he would have to pause. This proverb here that he's writing, this chapter right here that he's writing, is more significant than any other proverb that he writes. You see, some of the proverbs that he's been getting, he's gotten from other kings, from other wise people, things that he's heard, and he's just taking them and putting them down. It may be a pithy saying that he's writing down, but here he's taking time to tell a story. And that story is personal. And that story is significant. And as he writes the story, he says, "My son, keep my words." He says, "And store up my commands within you. Keep my commands," and underline these words, "and you will live." He's not saying to his son, "This is important." He is saying, "Keep these commands and you will live." He goes on to say here, "Guard my teaching as the apple of your eye." Many of you have heard that expression, "the apple of your eye." "She's the apple of my eye," or "my car's the apple of my eye." You've heard that over the years. You've heard it in poetry and songs and things like that. It comes from Scripture, in case you didn't know. And it's that little part of your eye, in the center of your eye, when you look intently at something, someone can see the reflection in your eye. He says to them, "Guard my teaching as the apple of your eye. Bind them on your fingers. Write them on the tablets of your heart. Say to wisdom, 'You are my sister,' and call understanding your kinsman." What Solomon wants him to do, what he's saying to his son and what he's saying to us, is the things I'm about to say to you, I want you to focus on. I want you to focus intently on, because I'm not just telling you something that you need to hear. I'm telling you something that could save your life. And then he goes on to there, he says, let her be. I want you to take action. I want you to bind these things on your fingers. So every time you look at your hand, you can see what I'm telling you. This is important, boy. This is important, son. I want you to pay attention to what I'm saying to you, because the things I'm saying to you now are going to give you life, or they're going to give you death. And then he goes on to say, "Call to wisdom, you are my sister. Call to understanding your kinsman." He is saying, I want you to desire these things. I want you to desire these things. He says, "Make wisdom and understanding your sidekick." I like that term, sidekick, because every man needs a sidekick. I started to put in here wingman because of Top Gun, but that's been overdone. And not only that, I heard when I was growing up, we always called the wingman was the guy that you went with to a singles bar to help you pick up women. So that wouldn't be good. But make wisdom and understanding your sidekick, someone that's right beside you all the time, someone that's with you all the time. And then he hits the point. They will keep you from the adulteress, from the wayward wife with her seductive words. Before you turn right there, I want to just make a statement, because I want you to understand that Solomon is writing to his son here. I want you to understand that, because this story, this section of scriptures is not just for men, it's for women as well. He is saying here, if he was writing to his daughter, he would say, I want this to keep you away from the adulterous man. I want this to keep you away from bad things that's going to happen to you. The only reason why we're using a woman here is because of the fact that he is writing to a man. And in this story that he's talking about, you can just put the idea of fulfilling lustful desires. That goes for men as well as women. I want you to notice something here, because if you look at this next page, it says the twisted family tree. And the reason why it's a twisted family tree is because Solomon should not have been king. This should have never happened. Solomon, in retrospect, should have never been born. And Solomon is writing today. He's writing at this time to his son because Solomon saw and heard the stories about what happened. And if you're here today and you're not familiar with your Old Testament, or it's been a while, I went through and I started looking at the stories of David and of Solomon and of David's sons and how Solomon became king. And as I'm studying these stories, I realize we have an R-rated sermon today. Because as you look at these stories, you see a line that continues throughout this family. And when Solomon's writing this story, he's reflecting on these things. The scripture that's right under that, you can see these were the sons of David and all the different sons that he had. And in this, you can see where Solomon is in all of these pages here. We're not going to go through that, but I really quickly want to start you off to the story of David and Goliath. You see, David had come along, and he was anointed by Samuel, and Samuel was just kind of saying, hey, you're going to do something great. His brothers were a little jealous of him, I'm sure. And David gets the call to go out to the battlefield and take his brothers who are in the army, and David, being a shepherd, gets to take them bread and water. And he runs it out there, and he's out on the battlefield, and he hears about this man Goliath, and he hears about what Saul is going to do for whoever kills this Goliath. And he hears about what Goliath does every day. He comes out and he stands there, and he's bigger than life. And he says, mano a mano, let's one of you come out and kill me, or I'll kill you, and that'll decide who will win the battle. And Saul sends words out, anybody that will go out for this guy, I will give them my daughter, and I will give them wealth. And David hears, I can get dollars and a daughter. I can get chicks and bucks. In the very beginning of time, we see David's wrestling with the things that most men wrestle with: wealth and women. Wealth and women. And his brothers say to him, you're conceited, you need to get out of here. And when I read that as a kid and up until recently, I always saw that when they said, you're conceited, you need to go back home and you need to take care of the sheep, I saw it as them being jealous. But here's what I want you to notice. I got to reflecting on me and my brothers and how we treated one another and what we said about one another when we were trying to get them to do what we wanted them to do. We spoke truth. I know it's hard to believe, but I weighed barely 90 pounds soaking wet when I was a teenager. And my brothers just, it was unmerciful. I would be with friends, and they would say, Neil, turn sideways. And I'd turn sideways, and they'd say, see, he disappears. I mean, it was terrible. And we made fun of my older brother. He was big, and we made fun of him. He wasn't fat, but we told him he was fat. And so when David's brothers are here, they're saying, "You're conceited." They're probably speaking truth to David. And of course, David does what David does and kills Goliath. And he becomes king eventually. And one night, the scripture says, when kings go out to war, David is at home in his palace. And what you need to understand, for those of you who heard the story when you were little, that when he was in the palace, he was not looking at a distance. Everybody was building their houses up against the palace. And he probably had homes for the men that fought for him close by. And David was looking around to see what was going on. He was watching people pack up their wares for the day or secure their doors, and people going home and some people going out. And he was probably watching all of that. And as he's watching all of that, he looks over and he sees a woman who's bathing. She's naked. He flips through the channels and he sees her. And he goes on and then he flips back. And gentlemen, you know what I'm talking about. And he has such a desire for that woman that he brings her over and he sleeps with her, and she becomes pregnant. And because she becomes pregnant, he tries to hide it. So he writes down on probably the same desk that he wrote 73 of the Psalms. He writes down when her husband is in the thick of battle, everybody pull out. Her husband will be killed. I will take his wife into the palace, and everybody will say, "Oh, what a great king David is. He's taken this pregnant widow woman into his household." So when Solomon's writing, he's thinking of David, and he's thinking of the things that David struggled with David and Bathsheba, but it just didn't start there. Solomon saw what happened to David's first son, Amnon, and many of you say, "Amnon, I've never heard of Amnon." Well, if Amnon had lived, you would have heard more, but Amnon had a thing for his half-sister. You see, David had seven wives, and when you have that many family members, occasionally you have somebody that's attracted to somebody else in the family, and Amnon could not get over his lust for Tamar. And because he had such lust for Tamar, what he decided to do is he was going to feign that he was sick, and she was going to come into his room and bring some cakes that she made. And when she brought those cakes in the room, he would finally have his way with her, and he did, and he raped her. And there's a key verse in all of that that is so powerful. Because all it says that David did about it is David got angry. David got angry. You see, David can't be angry and judge his son when he's the man that took his neighbor's wife and killed him and brought him into the household. Well, see, Tamar had a brother. His name was Absalom. He should have been next in line. But Absalom saw that David wasn't stepping up and doing what David should have done to Amnon. So Absalom took care of it himself. And if you'll look at your sermon notes, the stories are there all in 2 Samuel. And Absalom takes care of Amnon, and Amnon is killed, and Absalom gets on the run. But Absalom finally figures out, "Hey, look, my dad can't be king. He can't be a man in this situation. He's not stepping up where he needs to do what he needs to do. And so I'm going to take care of the situation. I had to take care of Amnon. So I am going to go into my father's house, and I am going to take over his kingdom with my army." And he goes into the palace, and he takes all of David's wives and concubines and rapes them on the rooftop for the whole city to know about. And he thinks that is going to make me man enough where the kingdom's going to respect me. But David's army comes along and they find Absalom hanging from a tree where his hair got caught in this tree, and they run him through with spears. There's one other brother that I didn't put in here, and he was trying to take over the kingdom by marrying one of David's wife, thought that would make him king, but Bathsheba and Solomon found out about it, and they killed him. So here is Solomon way beyond being supposed to be being king, and he is king, and he's writing these words to his son. And I want to tell you something about wisdom. You can have all the wisdom in the world, and you can know what's right, and you can know what you're supposed to do, but you can still fall. You can still make those mistakes. As a matter of fact, Solomon, when he was writing this, it says in 1 Kings chapter 11, verses 1 through 4, King Solomon, however, loved many foreign women beside Pharaoh's daughter. And instead of listing the names of all the women, what he says he's going to do is he's going to list the countries. Have you ever thought about that for a moment? Can you show me the women you love? And he pulls out a map. It says in here, look at this, Moabites, Ammonites, Edomites, Termites, I'm sorry, Sidons, and Hittites. Everywhere you turn, he had a woman. Look down at the bottom of this. It says he had 700 wives of royal birth, 300 concubines, and his wives led him astray. Well, duh. I mean, I'm not good at math, but that's 1,000 women. I have a difficult time dealing with one. 1,000 women. There are only 365 days in a year. And the man had 1,000 women. And it goes on to say, and they led him astray. He couldn't do anything. So when he sits down and he writes these words, he gets to the next point. And he begins to think about the family history and the desires that he had. And he wants to warn his son. And he writes these words. He tells this story. He's writing to his son, but this could be to a daughter. You can put in the words. He says, at the window of my house, I looked out through the lattice, and I saw among the simple. I want you to underline those words, the simple. It doesn't mean that he was ignorant, it means that he was unprepared. It means that he was just a normal guy doing normal things. He was not wicked. He doesn't say here, I looked out the window and I noticed a young man who was evil or wicked or was rebellious. He says, I looked through the lattice and I saw among the simple, I noticed among the young men, a youth who lacked judgment. Underline those words. A youth who lacked judgment. And in having that judgment there, he says he was going down the street near her corner. Underline the words near, because he was headed in the wrong direction. Walking along in the direction of her house. Underline the word direction there. At twilight, as day was fading, as dark of night set in. Underline the words dark at night. I remember when I was growing up and I would try to get my dad and mom to let me stay out after midnight. That was a big deal to me. And I'll be honest with you, and teenagers, do not try this at home. I'm a trained professional and I got in plenty of trouble for this. You don't have to pay the stupid tax here, okay? I told my mom and dad one time, I wanted to stay out until 2 o'clock in the morning with some of my friends, and I told my mom and dad, I'm spending the night with my friend. And it was at 10 o'clock at night, so I didn't think my mom and dad would call my friend's mom and dad to find out if I was spending the night. And guess what? my parents knew I was up to something. And I was still at a place where they could contact me. And it was 10 o'clock at night. And guess what? I didn't stay out until 2 o'clock at night. I didn't stay out until 10:30. I had to come home right then. But one of the things my mom and dad would tell me all the time when I wanted to stay out past midnight is nothing good happens after midnight. And young people, y'all are going this way. All the people that are my age are going... My two sons, they wanted to stay out after midnight. And I would tell them all the time, only if I can come with you. That ruined it. Parents, there's a little parenting advice for you tonight right there. Just tell them, you can stay out to midnight, but I'm going with you. If you're going to stay out, I'm going to stay out. And by the way, I still have a desire to stay out at midnight, but it's only if I can go to Walmart, because I am so entertained after midnight at Walmart. But nothing good. He says, dark of light has set in. So the first thing I want you to fill out, and young people, listen to these words. Avoid the direction, not just the destination. If you're headed down the wrong path, you need to avoid the direction, not just the destination. The term that Lot pitched his tent towards Sodom should be enough to scare us. And we need to avoid the direction, not just the destination. You see, in this, I don't believe this young man was wicked in any means. I don't believe this young man had any intent to go out and have an affair with a married woman. I don't think this man had any idea what he was going to be doing that night. He just went down near the direction of this woman. And then it goes on to say, then out came a woman to meet him, dressed like a prostitute, with crafty intent. And I want you to underline those words, crafty intent. I know this is hard to believe, but there was a day and age when I was growing up where when you went to camp and you went to different places, they took a ruler and they measured the bottom of your shorts to the top of your knee. Teenagers, you're like, wow, that's old school. And I'm not here to tell you teenagers how you should dress. I'm not here to tell you women or men how to dress. But I do want you to look at your heart. When you go out places, you need to think about your intent by what you're wearing. This woman looked in her closet as she was looking at things. She'd go, oh yeah, I know this will work because every time I wear it, I get people looking at me. There's not a dress code. There's not rules of what you should wear. And this is not just for women. This is for men. I am long since wearing anything that makes me look sexy. But if you're dressing so that you're sexy to the opposite sex, then your intent is there. It says, then came out a woman dressed like a prostitute with crafty intent. She is loud and defiant. Her feet never stay at home. Now in the streets, now in the squares, at every corner she looks. She took hold of him and kissed him. And with brazen face she said, I have a fellowship offering at home. Today I fulfilled my vows, so I came to meet you. Wow. That is a horrible pickup line. I've just been to church, and I'm out here. And I think about it being a horrible pickup line, and I think about the fact that a lot of times we as Christians are no different than this woman. We say one thing, we say we follow Christ, this is who we are. I've been to church this morning. Hey, you want to go have sex? We live in a culture where living together unmarried is acceptable all across the world. And when I sit down with couples who are living together outside of marriage, they look at me like I've got three heads when I tell them the Bible condemns that. And when I tell people that if you're living with, you can't call yourself a Christian if you're living with someone that's not your spouse. You can't call yourself a Christian if you're doing the things that God has told you not to do outside of marriage. There's another thought here. As she says, I have a fellowship offering at home. Today I fulfilled my vows. That fellowship offering was probably a goat or some kind of animal, a lamb or something. And she took the lamb. They were sacrificed. The priest got some of the meat, and she got some of the meat. And so she was basically saying, hey, big boy, I got some barbecue at home. Because even back then, women knew the way to the man is feed him. It goes on to say here, turn your next page over, I look for you and I have found you. I have covered my bed with colored linens from Egypt. I have perfumed my bed with myrrh and aloes and cinnamon. Come, let's drink deep of love till morning. Let's enjoy ourselves with love. My husband is not home, and he has gone on a long journey. Wow. I don't know what her voice sounded like, but it could very well have sounded like Jessica Rabbit. I'm just seeing who watched that movie. I don't know what it sounded like, but it sounded good. She says, come, let us have love. And isn't that what we're all looking for? Isn't what everybody's wanting? Everybody's wanting to love and to be loved. Let us have love. And I love the way she says, let us enjoy ourselves with love. And teenagers, underline that word, mark it out, and just write lust. Because that's what they were doing. In today's society, we've taken words and we've made them seem like something else. Like we say now, instead of you're having sex, we're saying we're just making love. That's what makes it okay. But the reality of it is it's lust. And as Amnon did with Tamar after he raped her, he sent her away. He was disgusted by her after that point. And I know there's going to be a lot of you who are going to your Bible and saying, I can't believe that's in the Bible. I'm going to need to read this again. It's all in there. And we need to know what it says. So go back to number 2. I want you to write in your blanks, because if you don't get your blanks filled in, you cannot go to heaven. Don't fight against temptation. Run from it. Don't fight against temptation. Run from them. And that's the key to what he's saying right here. This temptation, this woman looked good. She looked good. She smelled good. She had all the right answers. I can't do that. What about your husband? What if we get caught? He's gone. He's gone away for months. Nothing's going to happen. We're going to have a night of bliss like you've never thought about in your life. And I am going to love you like you've never been loved before. And I can tell you, thinking back as a teenage boy, how good that must have sounded. And then Solomon drops the bomb. Look at what he says next. All at once. Underline all at once. Because nobody ever says, this is what my intent is, this is what I'm going to do. Things happen, and the next thing you know, you are knee-deep in it, and all at once, Solomon says, he followed her like an ox going to the slaughter, like a deer stepping into a noose, till an arrow pierced his liver, like a bird darting into a snare, little knowing it would cost him his life. And underline those words, it would cost him his life. We are supporting this rehabilitation project for men who have been snared into lust. We are doing this not just because it's a good thing to do, but because we want to help men who've gone down the wrong path, made the wrong directions, and have turned towards pornography instead of to the woman that they love, who've turned towards things that are outside of the Bible. And we want to give them life again. We're going to start advertising. I've got the advertisement with me. We're going to start advertising a retreat for men. And that retreat will be an opportunity. You hear more about some of the programs, men, that we have to offer. But look at what it says then in Proverbs 7, 24 through 12, 27. Now then, my sons, listen to me. Pay attention to what I say. Do not let your heart turn to her ways or stray into their paths. Many are the victims she has brought down. Her slain are the mighty throngs. Her house is the highway to the grave, leading towards the chamber of death. Strongest man to have ever lived, Samson, was brought down by his love. The greatest king that ever lived, David, was brought down by his lust. The wisest man who ever lived, according to the scripture, was brought down by his lust. And he says to men, he says to women today, find wisdom, find understanding, and don't go down that path. And your third point here is, remember, the end is sudden, shocking, and never worthy of the fun. Remember, the end is shocking, sudden, shocking, and never worth the fun. And I know somebody's going to say, Neil, you should not say that that's fun. Well, let me tell you, if you're having sex and it's not fun, you're doing it wrong. Okay? This is fun. Sin is fun for a season. Don't get me wrong. It's fun for a season. But the end is sudden, and it's shocking, and it's never worth the price you pay. I'm going to just tell you, we're going to sing an invitation song in just a minute. When we sing that invitation song, I want you to look into your heart and see where you are, especially young men who are coming of age right now. Where are you in your heart? Are you ready to follow God? Are you ready to have wisdom and understanding? Ladies, young ladies, you are going to be fighting this battle too. Are you ready for wisdom and understanding? Men, no matter how old you are, how are you handling this battle? I remember I was in my 40s, and a young friend of mine who was in his 30s, he came to me and he said, Neil, at what age do you quit having these thoughts? And I knew exactly what he was talking about. And I said, I don't know. I'll let you know when I get there. Young men, I'm still not there. It is a battle you're going to fight your lifetime. And as we sing this invitation song, I want you to commit to the purity that God has intended for you, to take captive the thoughts that will ensnare you so that you can become the man of God that He asked you to be. I don't stand before you today as someone who has never dealt with this temptation. I stand before you today, someone who stood on the rooftop and looked down and saw things that I shouldn't have been looking at and looked at things I should have turned my head away from. I don't stand here before you today saying I've got all the answers to it, but I know that there are men in this congregation that can help you with what you're dealing with. And as we sing this invitation today, if there is some way that we can help you, there's some way we can pray for you, if there's some way we can encourage you, or if you just need to make a decision that you're going to leave the life you've had in the past and come to a knowledge of God as His child and be buried with Him in baptism, whatever your need, will you come as we stand and sing?